Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today we'll discuss the article by Clifford et al. Titled, Arteriolar Vasodilation Involves Actin Depolymerization. This article was published May 4th, 2018. Joining me today are Associate Editor Robert Hester, Lead Author Phil Clifford, and Content Expert Bill Jackson. Let's get started.
Thank you, Kara. Phil, would you give us a little bit of a synopsis of your study, the hypothesis, and the results?
Sure, I'd be happy to. We were interested in studying a mechanism that causes vasodilation in small resistance arterioles. The resistance arterioles are those vessels that help balance oxygen delivery to tissues and blood pressure control. And the hypothesis behind the study was that actin depolymerization, that is conversion of F-actin to G-actin, was part of the process of relaxing the smooth muscle cells. What we found was that we used two different vasodilators that act by two different mechanisms of action, pinacetyl, a potassium channel opener, and sodium nitroprusside, which is a nitric oxide donor. We found that both vasodilators at the doses we used cause similar degrees of vasodilation, but the sodium nitroprusside produced no decrease in intracellular calcium concentration, while pinacetyl caused a large and significant change in intracellular calcium concentration. That suggested to us the possibility that the dilation was independent of a calcium-mediated mechanism. So we looked at actin, and we measured G-actin relative to a housekeeping protein called SM22-alpha. What we found was that for both vasodilators, both pinacetyl and sodium nitroprusside, there was an increase in the G-actin to SM22-alpha ratio, which signifies a reduction in the amount of F-actin in the cell. What was different between the two vasodilators, though, was that there was a decrease in myosin light chain phosphorylation with pinacetyl, but not with sodium nitroprusside. So the takeaway is that both vasodilators act partially through an actin depolymerization, but sodium nitroprusside is more dependent on that mechanism to achieve the vasodilation that it does.
So this study provides additional evidence that really closes the loop. So there's considerable evidence suggesting that contraction of smooth muscle is associated with actin polymerization, and this is produced by both calcium-dependent and calcium-independent mechanisms. The present study and a few others in the literature suggest that vasodilation is associated with actin depolymerization. What remains to be clarified is the precise role played by this process in vascular smooth muscle relaxation. Is the actin depolymerization driving the relaxation, or is it a consequence of the relaxation and the need to remodel the actin cytoskeleton with the change in geometry of the relaxed smooth muscle cells?
Studies that have looked at increasing pressure in resistance arteries have shown that that causes actin polymerization. And in fact, there are several studies that have now shown that this is required to cause the constriction with increases in pressure. So our hypothesis, and right now it's just a hypothesis, is that this depolymerization is essential for the vasodilation, but we can't exclude at all what Bill has suggested, that it might simply go along with the vasodilation that occurs.
So what do you think is the time course of this change in actin polymerization? Do you think this is a transient response, or do you think that the actin depolymerization would be maintained if the vessels remained in a vasodilated state for a prolonged period of time?
Yeah, the time course is really a crucial question because, of course, in this study, what we did was take the vessels out of the animal and mounted them on a chamber that allows us to study them. And those vessels were frozen, flash frozen at a particular point in time. So the data that we collected here apply only to that particular point in time. There are some really elegant techniques that can be used with confocal microscopy. So if one labels the actin fibers, we might be able to look at the time course. We've studied the actin filament response to pressure applied to the outside of smooth muscles and to smooth muscle cells. And that brief application of a high pressure to the outside of a vascular smooth muscle cell causes immediate, within milliseconds, dissolution of those fibers. So that we think that this is something that happens rapid and then it's maintained long term, but subject to change over time.
Phil, I'm going to go back to intact vessels in the tissue. So your preparation required that you put them at 70 millimeters of mercury of pressure. They had a myogenic constriction. If you're looking at something similar in a tissue, you may have other vasodilators that are present. So do you have any thoughts about how these two systems might interact in response to one or multiple vasodilatory stimuli?
A way complicated question. As far as I know, at this point, the evidence is that all of the vasodilators that have been examined cause actin depolymerization. So that list includes adenosine, papaverin, and an activator of AMP kinase. So now we have five vasodilators that have been studied and all evoke some change in F-actin. And so a working hypothesis would be that that would apply regardless of what the vasodilator is.
So, Phil, one concern that I had after I read your paper was actually with the use of pinacidil, because it's one of the KTP channel agonists that has non-K-channel effects. It's a K-channel independent vasodilator as well as being a KTP channel activator and vasodilator. And I wondered if you'd considered this in your selection of that drug for your studies.
It's a good question. The selectivity of that agonist wasn't a part of what we looked at. What we wanted was a control vasodilator that acted via a different mechanism. Sodium nitroprusside acts directly on the smooth muscle as an NO donor. And we thought pinacidil was a good choice because we knew that it causes changes in the vascular smooth muscle membrane potential. And so a very different mechanism.
One of the reasons I asked that question was because the change in G-actin that you observed with pinacidil was substantially larger than that was produced by sodium nitroprusside, suggesting that there was actually a larger effect with pinacidil than with sodium nitroprusside. And I wonder if you might comment on that.
Yeah, this gets to the technical aspects of the study. We reported the G-actin to SM22-alpha ratio. What we would have preferred to report would be the ratio of F-actin to G-actin in the cell. And many of the previous studies that have looked at the state of actin and its contribution to contraction of smooth muscle have been done in tracheal smooth muscle, where there's a larger mass of tissue available. Because these vessels are so small, these arterioles are about the thickness of a human hair, there's not much smooth muscle there. So we copied this approach by Bill Cole's lab at University of Calgary, where they measured the amount of G-actin and expressed it relative to the amount of SM22-alpha. There's a bit of variability in that ratio, and I'm uncomfortable making a direct comparison in a quantitative way of the G-actin to SM22-alpha ratios between the two dilators. Hopefully, there'll be some developments that allow us to make more direct measurement of F-actin, and I think that would address your question a little bit more directly.
I also wondered if you had looked at a very simple experiment of simply removing extracellular calcium to see how that affected the levels of G-actin in your system.
Great idea. We didn't do that, and it would have been a worthwhile experiment. We did measure the G-actin to SM22 alpha ratios in vessels that had been mounted but hadn't yet gained myogenic tone. And those values were similar to what we saw under panacidil and SNP conditions.
Phil, so what do you think are the next steps? What do you think are the next critical experiments that need to be done to really test this hypothesis?
I think the most important experiments that can be done regarding vasodilators is do a manipulation which stabilizes the actin cytoskeleton to see if interruption of this depolymerization process can impair the vasodilation that occurs. There's another direction that we're particularly interested in, and that is whether actin depolymerization contributes to the immediate increase in diameter that's seen during skeletal muscle contraction, so that we would like to examine the process if we can develop the techniques to see what happens when you apply external pressure to these cells and to see if there's an effect on the actin cytoskeleton.
I would like to thank Dr. Phil Clifford and Dr. Bill Jackson for participating in this podcast today discussing Dr. Clifford's paper that has recently been published in American Journal of Physiology, Heart and Circulatory Physiology.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology podcast. For more podcasts like this one, visit us online at physiology.org/journal/AJP Heart.